available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. Fight! I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner, going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. It is a Wednesday, not even evening, it's night.
we are recording this show at 8:40 p.m. And let me tell you, this is 40 minutes past my regular bedtime.
Yeah. We have a bunch of stuff going on today. We want to record a show, so we're knocking this one out on a Wednesday night, watching little Olympics. Lakers were on. AD just went down a little bit earlier. That's not good. But Team USA hockey, they're losing to Canada right now. I guess Canada's good at the hockey.
Who knew? I'm going to tell you. I'm watching a lot of Olympics.
You are? I realized
I didn't watch. When was the Summer Olympics last? Like 2 years ago? Is that what it was?
No, it was like last year.
Was it last year?
It was earlier this year, right?
Oh, was it? Well, I realized.
No, 2021.
Who knows? Who cares? I realized I didn't watch any of it, like literally any of it. And I'm like, wait, I have small children. Shouldn't I be like pretending at least that I care about stuff like this? Because then they can get excited about it. Because then I remember like when I was a kid, I loved watching the friggin' Olympics. And I'm why am I trying to, like, what am I doing here? Because I can pretend to think this is cool. And then they will, by proxy, think it is genuinely cool. And then they won't be as jaded and cynical about this stuff as I am. So I've actually watched a lot of Olympics this cycle. And let me tell you, ever since they turned it into just Winter X Games and that's all they do with the Olympics, it is so cool.
Oh, okay.
Like, the snowboarding halfpipe stuff, like, that was insane to watch. Like, did you watch that?
No, I don't. I've hardly watched any.
Oh, like, my God.
I don't like the way they delay everything, and you can see stuff on Twitter. It's just, and it's the fact that it's like, you know, half the world away. It's just tough for me. I'm not like a big Olympic guy in general.
Okay, so Ryan hates China. That's what we're hearing here.
No, Olympic sports, winter Olympic sports. Like, I don't ski. I don't snowboard.
So I was always more of a winter Olympics guy than a summer Olympics guy. I always found it more interesting. Because a lot of it just looks like a game. Like, when you're watching the bobsled, it's like, wow, that's like going down a water slide. That's super cool. And it's just people in like a metal rocket just going down a racetrack. And it's like, where's the skill here? I have no idea, but this is really cool to watch. But I'll watch the hell out of downhill skiing. Like, I'll just watch that. And I'll watch every single run, and I'll be like, oh, they missed their turn. That's not going to work.
That Norwegian guy didn't pull it off.
Yeah, and I was watching the slope style skiing. I don't know what slope style means. Have no idea. But like by the end of it, I'm like, oh, that sucker did not hold on the rail. They did not hold on the rail long enough.
I just saw on Twitter like that I think it's a gold medal game. I believe like USA and Canada, and I think USA won last time. I just saw it was going to be live at 8 p.m. Like, perfect. I'll turn it on. You know, like it's like live. It's happening right now, and it's us. It's a team sport that I watch and I know. So I'm like, oh, I'll watch that. Like, that's like, this is like maybe the first thing I've turned on.
And it's so interesting. Hockey is like the thing that I maybe least care about in any facet of my life, especially in the Olympics. No, I was watching some curling, dude. Like, I was getting into it.
I do like curling. The strategy and the stuff, it's like, crazy.
It's obviously not a sport in any real way. It is like purely just like pool, but it's cool. It's fun.
And we like won that last time too, I think. Like, I think the men won, like beat Canada or something. And
maybe.
Like some of those things we shouldn't beat Canada in. Like, we do that like as Canada should be in, you know, days, weeks of mourning if we beat them in a sport like that. Like something they invented or whatever. Like,
well, it's all on their home turf of ice.
Yeah, like. If it's on dirt or ice, like Canada should be good at it. Yeah. Because they got a lot of that.
They got a lot of dirt and ice.
We're off the rails already at an APL. You know, and I offered to bring beer in, and David said no.
Like, I'm way past my bed. Like, I'm not kidding. I am past my bedtime. All right. It is 8:40 and I am past my bedtime.
Yeah. Well, anyway, if you want to, because it's the off season, we finished our off season reports. Now we got to make up shit to talk about every week. So we got this week. It's going to be a little interesting. Thanks to our buddy Shane, we're going to do our official postseason top 10 POC listener ranking. So that should be a lot of fun. Shane sent in an email. We don't. All we got to do is read it, which is kind of some work, but not too much work. So that's okay.
It's something we would have done anyway.
We would have read it anyway, but now we're going to make a show out of it. Thanks, Shane. If you have any ideas, make sure they're not too much work for us. We want you to put in more work that like people. Shane brings this up in the email too, but Pac-12podcast@gmail.com is the email address. Questions, whatever, especially throughout the offseason. You can call or text us at 424-532-0678. You can tweet us at Pac-12podcast, and the website is Pac-12podcast.com. We're over on the Reddit, Podcast of Champions there, and on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please follow us and rate us with 5 stars. And if you're on the Apple Podcasting app, that's what David cares about. Leave us a review and say something, you know, maybe not positive about us. And we will still read it as long as it's a 5-star review. That's what we want. We beg for those 5 stars.
Yeah, we have a new one.
We have a new one? Oh, what do we got? Yeah.
This is from S-S-I. I don't know how to pronounce this. I'm going to put all cards on the table. E-S-A-I. I don't know how to pronounce that. You don't know?
S-I? Sure.
S-I?
I'll go with you on that.
Chime in and tell me because I'm an ignorant person. But S-I, G, 5 stars. 5-star CFB podcast. Awesome podcast. Both Dave and Ryan do a great job covering the Pac-12. Dave covers UCLA, but some recent openings on the peristyle might be the opening he needs to join the rebuilding Death Star. Let's be honest, covering UCLA football is just watching them trying to give away Chip Kelly, then instead signing him to an extension. All jokes aside, this is a great podcast. In LFR, we trust and fight on.
Oh, USC guy. He wants you to come work for...
He wants me to come work for you.
For the Death Star?
Yeah. Yeah.
You want to come over there?
No. No. that would not be palatable for a variety of people.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for the review. We appreciate that. I got to finish Boba Fett.
I haven't finished. I stopped after episode 2, so I need to catch up.
Yeah, yeah. There's only 7. I was like, it was kind of, it felt like a pretty good finale for 7, but I was like, I assume there's going to be 8, but then I looked it up, there's only 7.
If your thing is going to end in an odd number, it needs to be 13. That's my feeling on it. Yeah, not 7. 7 is, it's too odd. Yeah. If it's 5, it's a mini series, but 7, no. You can get that number up. You can go to 8.
They do a Boba Fett like behind the scenes thing. It's like 21 minutes on there on the Disney Plus. And it's funny. I didn't realize this. Like Boba Fett's like a thing. Like it's a big, he was a big deal. He's a huge, like you think, oh, he's a huge character in Star Wars. Like
he's in it for like a minute.
Yeah. They show, he has like 4 lines of dialogue. It's like, he's worth more to me alive or something like that. Like there's, he's got like 4 lines, you know, he's hanging out with Darth Vader and stuff. And from that, and I forget, it's like, yeah, it's like 90 seconds of screen time or so. It's like really not that long. It becomes this huge, you know, phenomenon. So, I mean, he was in the later movies. They, you know, the Jango Fett stuff and all that, which, you know, there's some bad storylines. But I kind of like that, like that he's, you know, he has his son and Boba's the son and, mm-hmm. Yeah, whatever. But it was kind of cool.
Sure.
Yeah.
Is it?
I don't know. It's like, it's Star Wars-y.
Yeah, it is. It's something.
It's Star Wars-y.
It's certainly something.
Yeah. Okay, so some news around college football, and we're going to get to the awards. I don't know if you saw the report today, David, but so Big Ten, they just did their TV deal like 5 years ago. Got a crap load of money. Man, it's huge. So Pac-12 did that $3 billion deal. It's 12 years ago, you know, and the Big Ten, you know, instantly passed it, then renegotiated, passed it again. Well, they're coming up on their next one. And apparently, the conference will make $1 billion a year for TV money. So the Pac-12, Larry Scott was all proud of $3 billion over 12 years. The Big Ten's now doing $1 billion per year.
It's a lot of money.
Seems like a lot.
It's a lot of money.
Okay. We're going to, like, how many Mel Tuckers of the world? Like, how, like, I mean, this is probably not going to go well.
No. And the Pac-12's deal isn't up again for still some years left on that sucker. There's certainly an arms race problem going on in college football. And I think at some point we're going to get to a level where there's if what these people pontificate about the health of the sport is correct, that, you know, you got to have a strong West Coast to actually have this be a national and not regional sport.
Yeah.
There's going to have to be some revenue sharing across conferences because there's no way this is sustainable.
It's going to be tough. And I don't know if you've seen, I've listened to some different podcasts. So David Ubben is a national reporter for The Athletic. I think he used to cover, he might have used to cover Tennessee. He's now like a, which is like a report, national reporter for them. He wrote a story about the Tennessee Collective. So it's like a well-funded, well-organized NIL collective. So these people that have worked in like sports properties and things that have come together as a booster group, essentially raised like $10 million and distributed it to recruits, essentially. Like, hey, if you come to school here, you're going to get this car, you're going to get this apartment. And you have to show up for like their collective like autograph signing. So there's they got to do something. It's pretty crazy. Like Texas has some sort of collective. Florida, they've been already documented. They're gonna be popping up all over the place. I'm wondering. It's hard for me to picture like that happening on the West Coast as much. Now maybe the strategy is gonna be like, hey, we're farther away, so it's gonna be tougher for you to like poach our guys. It's like, you know, Stalin, like, you know, in Moscow, like, yeah, we're pretty far from you. Like, they're going to take a long, it's like you got to march through the winter to get to us. By the time you get here, you're going to be pretty screwed up. You know, is it going to be like something like that? Like, that's our defense. Like, we're not going to like arm our soldiers, but by the time you get here, you're going to be really tired and, you know, hungry and shit. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't see the Pac-12 doing that either. And that's going to be a huge arms race going on. Like, that's not school money. That's like booster money outside that you're pooling together and say, here you go, recruits. This is what you're going to come and get when you're at our school.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. There's going to the realities of this is it's impacting. I think the combination of all of this hitting at the same time as COVID, I think, has been very sobering about what the Pac-12 is doing. You know, because I look at UCLA's situation and they're clearly. I always have been of the opinion that there is always money in the banana stand. Like, yeah, okay, they can't fire that guy, but they really can. And there's a donor out there who will come up with the money. UCLA is behaving, once again, very fiscally conservative. And I don't know how much of that is their budget situation, but I know the Pac-12 generally did not recover from COVID as easily and as well as other leagues, and for obvious reasons. The Pac-12 didn't allow fans back for the longest time, played fewer games than a lot of leagues, and so they didn't get as much TV money last year. And so I know the budget situations for a lot of the schools in the league are not great. And then you combine that with the lack of, I would say, broadly speaking, there's no way there's going to be the NIL interest out here that there is in all of these other leagues, particularly the SEC. And then you compare that money, because now that is that's a major open and out there competitive disadvantage that before it was cheating money. I mean, it was the money that got spent by boosters to bring people in. And, you know, Pac-12 schools did that to an certain extent, but they weren't doing it at the level, at the frequency that, some Big 12 powers and the SEC were doing. Now that's all out there, it's open, and more people are going to get involved because it's out there and open. They don't feel like they're doing something shady. Combination of all of that is, I mean, there's a immediate arms race that the Pac-12 has. It's not just that they're losing, it's that they've already lost it. And I think the dealing with the realities of that and how it's going to impact things going forward, I do think for the health of the sport, is eventually going to require some sort of revenue sharing. Otherwise, you truly will have kind of just have-nots out here, along with, you know, maybe some other minor schools in those leagues.
You're very subdued right now.
I'm tired, man.
You're tired. We do have an NIL question a little bit later, so we'll get into that more. But yeah, it's I've listened to a bunch of podcasts about it today, actually, and it's a little scary. People will probably come around, and I think you're going to have collectives like everywhere.
They're probably, I think at some level, they're also going to have to regulate it more than they currently do, or they're going to feel the need. I don't think they have to, but I think they're going to feel the need to.
Alabama got rid of their state law because, like, if you don't have a state law, then the NCAA is like, well, then you don't have to follow any rules except our are guardrails, like the stupid
which
guardrails.
Which don't exist, basically.
There's like a few things like, yeah, you can't pay for play, stuff like that. But Alabama's law that they passed where they were trying to help like Alabama and Auburn was a little more restrictive than, so they got rid of it. Like, they literally just repealed it. So, like, right. Nope, we're getting rid of that.
Yeah, and I think when you have amenable states, that works. Yeah, it's a real wild time. And the thing is, I don't know if there's even as much institutional interest in doing that sort of thing. Like, I think whether a UCLA or a, I think USC will have some interest in doing it, but like whether a UCLA or a Stanford or a Oregon as an institution wants to do it, it's a question of whether they can get enough boosters involved to make it work, to make it matter. And yeah, Oregon's going to figure it out with Phil Knight, but what about the other schools in the league?
The one interesting aspect was with this, the Tennessee one seems really well organized, but it's not just, there's going to be some big money guys, and there's people that have connections to local business and sports entity. Like, I read the article. I mean, it seems really well organized, but there's also an aspect of sort of like a GoFundMe thing where, like, if you're I'm a booster, but I'm not like a billionaire booster or a millionaire booster, but I'll give $20 a month and it's going to go towards players coming to Tennessee or paying, you know. And so fans can feel like they're getting involved and it becomes part of the collective. And the more people that give, the bigger the pot is. And if you're on a recruit that, you know, I don't know, Arizona State is trying to recruit this local kid and Tennessee wants him, and they're like, well, you come here and you get, you know, a six-figure payout. You're like, okay, I'm gonna leave the West Coast and go play in Knoxville.
Well, and you know, it's interesting. I think there's formats for that. I mean, I know the like Premier League and a lot of professional soccer leagues, they have like official fan groups that you're like kind of paying money into and you're like part of this thing. And I think you could do something very similar with college football, where you pay to be part of some sort of official fan group and you get some sort of benefits from it, and maybe the benefits are literally the thing that you are forcing these players to do in exchange for all your money, but you pay into something, some fund like this collective, and you just get back from it a signed shirt or whatever, and that's what you're getting from it. Yeah. And you're part of this group. And
but
you
if
get...
you also know that you're helping to build the team, right? Like you're giving money to the, so I'm donating to UCLA, and like, oh, okay, they're going to get new locker rooms or whatever. Like there's stuff they have to spend, right? Cause like it's a nonprofit, but you're like,
well, and
spending
I
money every year and losing money and all that stuff. Like you're paying for that stuff. This is where you can actually like, hey man, we need a quarterback. I'm going to help make him better by paying money. Well, and they get
the quarterback. And this is the part that's really, I think, why this is so interesting is it puts out in the open something that was always behind the scenes, but because it is out in the open, what you're running into is, so the SEC, wow, all these things popped up overnight. No, they didn't. All this infrastructure has been in place for 10, 20, 30, 40 years to pay players, and now they're just able to do it out in the open. Well, for a school like UCLA, UCLA has paid players over the years, of course. Every school does, and every school does it in different sports and the whole thing. I mean, you know, there were players paid at UCLA basketball and certainly some football players. But not to the extent the SEC did, and it was a one-off. Like, this guy here, that guy there. Not like what the SEC is doing. And so the infrastructure isn't in place to do this, and there isn't a booster base that's devoted to it. And I think this is the more important point, because for UCLA to suddenly develop a huge and robust NIL system, it almost has to cannibalize a little bit of its existing booster base. So these people who are funding buildings and funding capital campaigns and funding whatever, private jets for the coaches to go recruit, you're suddenly going to ask them for more money, or are you going to ask them to reallocate money?
Schools aren't going to like that, too, because the athletic department wants their money.
Right, and UCLA, being a cash-strapped institution right now, can't afford to off donations to something else.
But it's something that they need, you know,
to get players on. Yeah. And this is where I run into the issue, which is you've always got to be future-thinking, and it's hard for people who are in jobs where they have a contract to be future thinking. Like, I'm, well, okay, but I need to show performance in the next 2 or 3 years or else I'm out of here. So how do I do that while also being future thinking?
Yeah. We'll get into more NIL stuff in the question. Wanted to talk, breaking news. It looks like Chip Kelly searched far and wide
And he found somebody who used to be his linebackers coach.
We're going to get the best position coach possible. Someone that, you know, people didn't like Jerry Azzanero, so I assume this guy has no ties to him.
Uh-huh.
It's not like his friend or that the guy that introduced him to Chip Kelly. Right? Like, no one like that, right? I assume this is an outside hire that's just, you know, just probably been a defensive coordinator in college the last 10 years or so.
No.
Wait, what? So tell me about what's going
Bill
on.
Bill McGovern,
okay,
61, was last defensive coordinator, I believe, with Boston College.
I think 2012.
2012.
So that's a decade ago.
And he wasn't good. Wasn't good there. Does he have a tie to Chip Kelly and Jerry Azzanero? Oh, you betcha. You betcha. He was Chip Kelly's outside linebackers coach with the Eagles. Yeah, it's a really uninspired hire. It's very bad. People were counting on this one to be like the one that was going to shift things and turn the tide for Chip Kelly, and this is crap.
If you had to pick someone that was like, as like, if you didn't really get rid of Jerry Azzanero, like,
is the closest thing to rehiring Jerry Azzanero.
That's what I was saying, which I don't get it. Like, coaches can be so damn stubborn. Like, literally, I'm going to do things just to spite you because you don't think I could. Like, is this like Chip Kelly? I did not want to fire him. You've made me, and I'm going to just redo it. Like,
that's what I mean, honestly, if I were him, I think that's what he's like. That would be my thing. That would be the only reason I would make this hire. No, I mean, it does nothing to inspire the fan base. It does nothing to inspire to season ticket sales. It does nothing to get people positive about the season. And frankly, I don't think it's going to do a whole lot positive for the defense. Like, I don't think it's a good hire. There's nothing in his track record to indicate it's a good hire. You could, I mean, as with anything, you can have hope. I mean, why not? But no, I mean, there's nothing to indicate that this is anything other than what it looks like, which is a dud hire where he just went back through his Rolodex and found the most recent guy who looks kind of like Jerry Azzanero. And that was it.
I didn't realize that the hire, like, you guys reported this like earlier.
Yeah.
And I got an email from somebody that just, like, a USC fan that was emailing me about something else. Was like, oh, by the way, make sure you talk to Dave about, you know, the UCLA. I'm like, I didn't even know that happened. Like, oh, okay, it happened. Then I looked them up. And I'm like, oh. I'm like, I didn't expect that. Like, I expected something a little bit more, I don't know, there's a little more teeth to it.
Well, I mean, when you can hire a guy who's been a defensive coordinator twice for a total of 5 years and he's 61 to be your defensive coordinator in your make or break year, why wouldn't you?
I always look at, like, the last jobs. Like, you know, when you're like, oh, where was he? He was an inside linebackers coach. Like, it wasn't.
Oh, but he was a defensive assistant at Nebraska. I love it when they don't actually have a title associated with you. You're just a defensive assistant.
So, okay, so he did work. Okay, so Nebraska is obviously a blue blood program. I don't follow them lately, but I assume they're good. I remember they, like, won championships and stuff before.
I'm going to fight you.
He was an analyst, though. So was it, like, good enough to be, like, on Scott Frost's, like, staff as a full-on assistant?
But that makes – I mean, he learned under the best.
Yeah, because I'm sure he's done really well at Nebraska.
So if you go through it,
have they won a I don't know. Okay.
I will fight you. he was at Boston College forever. He was like their linebackers coach forever. And then he was 4 years as their coordinator. And then he must have done such a really good job that he got into the NFL after that. Did he get into the NFL as a coordinator? No, he didn't. Did he get into the NFL as, like, a pure linebackers coach? No, also not. Did he get in there as an outside linebackers coach? Yes, he did. For Chippy. And then was linebackers coach with the Giants, was linebackers coach again with the Giants. I don't know why it's listed twice. And then he was in linebackers coach with the Bears, sandwiched around that defensive assistant assignment at Nebraska. So, yeah, really uninspired. Who knows? Things can change, and maybe he's going to be very good, but there is absolutely zero in his track record to indicate that's the case.
All right. Well, we'll follow along with that one. UCLA's got their DC.
Please don't. Just ignore UCLA football. Ignore it until it starts acting right.
Transfer portal due today, too?
Yeah. Starting defensive end, Mitchell Agudé, elected to go into
third
the
string. Third string?
Or no, like... no. Starter.
Oh.
Starter. Okay. Starter. Best pass rusher. Yeah. He decided he had enough of this, and he's moving on.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, transfers, like, just going to happen. They're just going to be.
Yeah, it just happens.
I mean, it happens all over the place, but, like, you obviously, know.
Well, yeah, and I mean, especially for programs that have decided to pivot to building entirely through the transfer portal, yeah, it totally happens. It's no big deal.
At least he's got his extension, you know, and like you can.
Yeah, at least he's got that, so you know, yeah, you can really build around that whole thing.
Okay, well, let's move on to our topic of the day. We got, so Shane's not really an official part of the podcast, but I guess he is. But he usually puts out his
we split the revenue with him.
Yeah, he gets all $0. Postseason top 10 rankings. I'm wearing a bunch of jockey stuff, by the way.
I'm wearing jockey underwear.
I got, like, these pants. Hold on, look.
Oh, wow.
They're like pajama pants, but they're actual, they look like pajama pants, but they're like comfy. I put them on yesterday.
Aren't pajama pants comfy?
Yeah. They're good, okay, though.
I've been wearing
around. But we've had like crappy weather. Like, I've been wearing them around, and this is like a jockey hoodie I got. So, thanks to jockey. So, yeah, and our buddy Tom's going to be there at the Pac-12 basketball tournament. So, we got to let him know. But Shane puts this list out. So, it's, you know, it's one of those long emails, but it's a postseason team, you know, report for us. And we call it the official top 10 because we're not going to come up with our own.
Shane supplies it.
Right. And so we just, it's unofficial, but as soon as we get it, it's officially official. It's official. So that's the topic today. So these are like the best, and there's some honorable mention people too. You know, the best people that are contributors in some way.
Yeah.
To the Podcast of Champions.
I love it.
It's a really good list.
So should we begin?
Yeah. Do you want to, we can take turns, like,
yeah, I love
numbers.
It.
Do you want to start?
Well, so should we read his preamble first?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's
do it. the official postseason top 10 rankings. David, send Ryan for beers. We're doing this. No turning back. During bowl season, Chris in NC wrote in apologizing for his long emails, claiming he would do better in the future. I will do no such thing. But somebody has to listen to every episode and document an official record of the season's contributors, right? Right? So now that we're done with postseason team reports, here it is, backed by minimal demand, the official 2021 Kevin M. Hogan Podcast of Champions postseason top 10 rankings. This is just like the Podcast of Champions. To call it 2021, we are in February of 2022.
But I think it's like from the previous year.
Yeah, but to wait, but to be like 40 days into a year and doing a 2021 wrap-up.
But
that
I love
is,
how
that is chef's kiss.
The Kevin M. Hogan, like he gives it the Stanford name. Like it's awesome.
It's gorgeous. All right, so we're going to start off with the others receiving votes. I'll read these, and then we'll get into the alternate.
Okay.
All right, others receiving votes. The Zodiac Killer. He will always be All Right Now by the band Free Guy, yet he spent the better part of this season using up his monthly phone call to dial a podcast voicemail through a scuba tank to sing Sir Mix-a-Lot and Rolling Stones songs. Do better at life. Shane. There's another person named Shane somewhere, and this season he wrote in at least once asking you to, quote, rank things. Shane, that's not how this works. Don't ask them to do work. Just rank the things yourself and send them in. These guys will read anything you write, even if it's an arduously long list insulting their contribution to their own podcast.
Yeah.
And then finally, Ryan.
I've received votes.
You're an other receiving votes.
Yeah.
You didn't make the cut for the top 10.
I did not, no. Okay, on to the real contenders and valued contributors, the top 10. So number 10 is Chris in NC. Usually I can't stand long listener emails that force us to indulge their inane drivel, but Chris in NC is great.
Yeah, Chris in NC, I believe he will also win the Newcomer of the Year award.
Oh.
Because I want to say,
are we adding stuff to this? Are we doing our own work? Like that seems off brand.
It's just I'm remembering him and I don't think we saw him before. God, you're... Look, I'm taking everyone behind the curtain. Ryan's computers here are just frustratingly so, and I'm fed up with the equipment that he provides me. Just fed up.
Yeah.
Chris is, he was new to the pod this year.
Okay.
So he was new in October.
What was his, do you remember one of his emails or what was the?
His had some good, he was going through Khan Academy. He was doing some funny stuff. He had a philosophical bent with some of the stuff he was doing.
Okay.
He did a critique of pure fandom. I mean, there was a lot of good stuff from Chris this year. He was originally calling himself the Ghost of Bruins Past, but he dropped that. Good stuff.
All right. I can keep going, I guess. Ryan, number nine, Ryan Gorsey. One time he said 2017 Cal would win 10 games. So he'll have a place on this list forever. He's the dark side of the moon of this top 10 list. That record was on the Billboard chart for like 25 years because people would get stoned and listen to any old nonsense as long as it's packaged well. If you time up Dark Side of the Moon to the Cal TCU Cheez-It Bowl, money starts playing as soon as Cal throws their fifth interception. Hey, speaking of being totally stoned all the time.
So Ryan Gorsey, the man, the myth, the legend. They went 5-7 the year he predicted that they would go 10-2.
Yes.
Incredible.
Right.
Incredible.
And I love that Shane keeps him on this list.
Well, because I remember at the time, and this was back when our listenership was, I think, only 2 or 3 people instead of 7 to 8.
Yeah.
There was conversation on multiple message boards about Ryan's performance. I'm not going to call it an appearance. Performance on the show. It was top tier. Ryan Gorsey, wow. Dearly missed.
Yeah,
Dearly missed.
We love Ryan. But yeah, he was a little bullish on some of the Cal stuff.
He was the man.
Yeah.
The man. Absolute man. All right, next up, we've got 8, Evan in Tempe. He might be my favorite person. Legitimately love what he brings to the show. Stony Evan is earnest and real. We need more of that. He's graduating soon, and like all ASU graduates, he'll be returning to LA and resuming his USC fandom. Great work on your study abroad season, Evan.
Like all ASU students, he'll be returning to LA to resume his USC fandom. That's so awesome.
That's so good. And it's very true.
Is Evan like an edible guy, or is he like bowls? I think he's a bowl.
He's a bowl guy. You can hear it in his voice. Evan, if we're disparaging you, please let us know.
Yeah. He's got a voicemail today, too. So.
Yeah.
Okay. Hithliday. He's great in those football things, and I like having him around. But, dude, if I wanted to hear about college football coaching and rosters, would I be listening to this podcast? No. Send your football questions to the gambling analytics podcast that spends the first 3 minutes boasting about how they won't bribe you to write podcast reviews. We're above that here. We will bribe you.
Yes. We are not above bribery.
We choose this podcast because we're all adult men and 2 women that like Utah who want an outlet where we can convince other like-minded adult men and 2 women that like Utah that they should watch Wreck-It Ralph 2. Sorry, I'm laughing too much to get through some of these. It's so good.
Yeah, Hithliday will always have a place on this list.
Yeah, he's like... what was the one, the analytics one? Like, that's probably the one he's talking about. They mention Hithliday a lot. Like, he's I guess he makes the rounds on some of these.
And here's something very interesting. Who in today's internet is actually able to maintain a pseudonym and, like, be found in multiple different places? Like,
yeah,
on podcasts. You're posting on SB Nation. You're all over the place.
Oh, does he post on there?
Pure pseudonym. It's incredible.
Yeah, that's
good. Choosing one from some like obscure bit of fiction. It's just great.
I mean, if we cared a lot, we could, but I don't care. Like,
I mean,
someone wanted the little Oregon, and I was like, I need an actual picture of Hitler. They wanted there was like Oregon keychain things, like the underwear for jockey.
I said,
I'll send you one. I need an actual pic of Hitler.
We need pics.
He was not doing it. So,
no, I can't imagine.
Yeah.
But Hithliday, the man. All right, number 6, Jake Haner. This podcast only has like 6 jokes, and Jake Haner is personally responsible for keeping the lights on for 2 of them. You guys may forget now, but for like 3 weeks, we were burdened with insufferable frontrunner David Woods, a dreadful character, suddenly boastful about UCLA football. Who fixed it single-handedly? Jake Haner. We were poised to head into another year without a Jake in the quarterback room at UW. Who almost fixed it single-handedly? Jake Haner. When somebody writes an email asking you to discuss each of the Pac-12 quarterback rooms and the two of you can't remember the actual names of players on actual rosters, whose name did you come back to? Old steady, Jake Haner. Godspeed, you beautiful Jake. That's so true. Do you remember, was that last week when we were painfully trying to remember the names of quarterbacks in this very league and
right.
We named Jake Haner, who actually didn't transfer to Washington?
I think we realized he didn't transfer.
No, we did, and we said that in real time. But I think, like, literally I said, Jay Kaner, who's actually not going to Washington, but I don't know who else they have on roster.
Right.
Damon Heward. No, the other Heward. What's his name?
Sam.
Sam.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you have, like, quarterbacks leaving, you know, if do I got to keep track of some kid well, that was
so
at
I
Washington
have,
State?
So you're telling me I've got to find Jaden DeLora. I've got to keep track of him. Right. It's got like a where's Waldo? What the hell? I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
He's small.
He's not that big. that was a good one. Okay, five. The one Colorado guy who said this podcast parrots too many mainstream media takes. Oh, this should be good. This is exactly the kind of midseason comment that gets overlooked and forgotten forever, but we should celebrate this crazy-ass take from Colorado guy. Just look at the conference's single biggest storyline of 2021 for evidence. Mainstream media. USC has a top five job and should pursue Matt Campbell or Luke Fickell and maybe take a run at Lincoln Riley. This podcast. USC lacks talent and should just... reanimate the decaying bones of John Robinson, who is definitely dead. Then should exhume his corpse, throw some sunglasses on it, and have Lori Loughlin pay off her community service debt by dancing around with his dead flesh on the sidelines a la Weekend at Bernie's. Either that or Jack Del Rio. Colorado guy, you popped your head out of the sand once this season, and while the rest of our community may have forgotten you, like an elephant or a car bumper in 2002, I never... forget. Top five POC performance, elite work, you goofball.
Love it. Love it.
I don't remember that, but I kind of remember someone like complaining about yes. that. We're too mainstream. Like, what? Like,
are you listening to this?
Like, okay.
Coming in at number four, David Woods.
Oh.
Like Florida State in the 90s, Davis spent every week of this poll's existence in the top five. This fake poll that I made up and only I care about is one of this weird podcast's most storied arbitrary biannual activities, and David continues to show he's one of this podcast's five most respected names.
I like it.
Where do I rank?
You're four.
Where do you rank?
I'm getting votes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are they more votes than me?
No, less votes.
Yeah, fewer votes.
Yeah.
Fewer votes.
For sure.
Yeah.
I'm
this is official. You're the one who made this official.
It's official.
Too. Yeah.
You know, I'm sort of glad where I am on the list. I think it makes sense.
I'm just glad that somebody is finally recognizing my importance to the show, how integral I am to the entire process from start to finish, from conceptualizing all the way through production and disseminating.
Yeah. All right. Number three, the number of goals we're down to Canada this game. Hockey's so hard. Like skating, like, doing a sport on skates, on ice, like, that's just, like, it's like, okay, I'm going to play baseball, but you're going to be on fire. Like, you know, like, there's, like,
he's
adding a level of complexity.
So I just share you a deep, dark story from my childhood. I never mastered skating at any level.
No, I wasn't very good either.
I couldn't do it. I could not. Like, the idea of rolling on the ground, like I'm talking about, like, roller skates.
Okay,
roller blades. I couldn't do that. Couldn't handle it. Couldn't handle, like, the movement. Like, it's counterintuitive. You got to push your legs instead of stepping. No.
Yeah.
And then I tried going ice skating one time, like 10 years ago. Fell so, so fucking hard. I've never fallen so hard so many times in like a quick span. And I was like, finally at the end, I was just that dude hanging on to the wall.
Yeah.
And I was just like, nah, I'm not letting go of this wall again.
No.
Yeah.
I was okay at the ice skating. Not great, but better than like roller skating. But we would... Growing up in like New England, like you could go on little ponds and like skate and stuff like in the winter. You couldn't do that here, probably. We did have hail though. There was hail in like Pasadena. That looked cool. And plus, if you go to like a skate thing and like you want to try to flirt with a girl, you could fall down in front of her and stuff, and you know she can help you up.
Yeah, but what if you can't get up and then you just pull her down too?
Yeah, well then I don't know, make out with her on the skating ice. I don't know. Probably not doing that.
Cold and fucking freezing to the ice. Yeah.
My niece is 16. She plays ice hockey because my brother-in-law, grew up playing hockey. So she's like, I go watch her games and stuff. It's pretty cool.
That's great.
All right. Anyway, number three, John Abrea. This man has made me question the nature of fandom itself. Is it okay to switch sides of a rivalry midseason and abandon your inner truth? Can you just become an Arizona Wildcats fan? Hell yeah, you can. Let's do it. All of us. Okay, we're all doing it. Now that we're in agreement that we're all Arizona
remember for just a second that Shane is a self-loathing Washington fan, as I am a self-loathing UCLA fan, and as John is a self-loathing USC fan. So, yes, let's all just adopt another team.
He says, so now that we're in agreement that we're all Arizona fans, here's the top five memorable Arizona Wildcat games This is not a joke. We're all rooting for Arizona now. So number five is 1998 Washington, the Ortega Jenkins flip. What is that? What's it? Do you remember that Dunham. One? I kind of remember that. Number four was 2007, beating number two Oregon, 34-24, the Dennis Dixon game. Is that the one Dixon got hurt?
I think it was the one where he got hurt, and then UCLA shut them out the next week.
Okay. Number three, 1992, Washington defeating number one Washington, 16-3, that ended a 22-game win streak for UW. That's a pretty good one. Number two, 1994, Fiesta Bowl, Arizona 29, Miami 0. Deserts warm. That was pretty desert swarmy. And then number one, the 86 Territorial Cup, the Chuck Cecil game. Again, not a joke. This is useful information for all of us new as new Arizona fans.
Love it.
So good.
This is from DC in LA. This is number two. So next up, number two, DC in LA. Danny's original self-promotional podcast review that doubled as a retail commercial for Jockey underwear was a game changer, the first of its kind. It was the moment our Skynet became self-aware and reviews replaced emails as our primary form of listener input output. But the foundation for Danny's shining moment was laid by another trailblazer.
Nice.
Wow. Yeah, that was. And a couple of people tried to mimic it, and they did a pretty good job. But. Right. Incredible.
But he was the first one to come out and openly campaign for like free underwear.
Well, and it was also, I think he wrote the review as us reading it.
Yeah. So we had to do it.
Yes. So it was beautiful.
It was very good. So leads us to another trailblazer. Number one, the marketing guy at Jockey. Was there any doubt as who would be powerful enough to unseat Bree the intern at number one? I should talk to Bree. She might have graduated by now. I don't know.
We should get her back on the show.
We could, yeah. See what she's doing. What had been a proud program of self-deprecating indifference and animal sound effects, followed by an hour of listener emails contrasting Robert E. Lee and Clay Helton, both Caucasian heroes, accompanied a horse named Traveler to a few early wins and then spent years surviving in retreat. Both pissed away resource advantages, wasted countless lives, and are cheered on by a small handful of lunatics in rural Georgia. Fucking awesome. It's so good. For three straight months, I can't even see. For three straight months in 2021, this program was transformed into an hour of podcast reviews, begging for underwear, followed by a short program of self-deprecating indifference and animal sound effects, thanks in large part to this one man. Bear down to keep up the work, your friend, compatriot, and new Arizona fan, Shane. We got to do that. I'm like literally crying.
Really kind of. Good. It was really good. Yeah.
The rural Georgia one, like, you know, like where Clay Helton's now coaching, is just like so good.
Oh, man. Well, our friend at Jockey, just a tremendous, tremendous.
Tom,
man.
Yeah.
Tom from Jockey is incredible. Mm.
We're going to see him
at the Pac-12 tournament.
The Pac-12 tournament. Just, you know, does everyone know? We got some more. I know you were shocked I went to the USC-Oregon game, basketball game.
And?
I'm going to go to the Pac-12 basketball tournament.
And so will I.
Yeah. So I asked David if he was going. He didn't respond, but he apparently told me before that he was.
Yeah, I sure did. But, my memory of this is correct.
It's really difficult to just say yes when I send you a text message, or you just don't answer.
I mean, sometimes it is. Did you even ask me a question? I think you just told me you were, and I acknowledge that in the peace and quiet of silence. You said, here, I'm going to go back through it. Hang on.
I think I asked you if you were going.
No, you said, I'm going to Pac-12 tournament, 8:31 a.m. Monday, nothing else, except for can you record tomorrow afternoon?
Okay. Like,
soon thereafter.
Which then you didn't respond to
I didn't
either.
Respond to it for a while.
Right.
But nonetheless, we are both going. To Las Vegas.
Yes.
For the Pac-12 tournament. The question we have for you, the listener, is are any of you going? And if so, do we want to meet up?
We could do a little meetup.
We could do a little meetup. And if not, Ryan and I could just drink in a bar by ourselves.
We could do that too. I assume UCLA is going to be out early, right? So you won't have to work as much or whatever. Or
I'll fight you.
Okay.
Who knows? The way they're playing, maybe they'll be there on Wednesday and I'll be, you know, drunk as a skunk for four straight days. Who knows?
Nice. I had people, I had interns covering the USC-UCLA game at Galen. Now, I was in Vegas having dinner watching. Well, actually with a bunch of like diehard UCLA. There was some USC fans, but some diehard UCLA fans, like season ticket holders for basketball and stuff. They were not happy at the at that hoops game.
No, no, it was not an enjoyable experience. It was not a fun game to watch.
But
and you not caring, saying, "Oh,
I was just happy because like I had someone filming like highlights. I had a they were gonna do an instant analysis. I had a student from the newspaper that was gonna like write up a story. Like, no one's gonna watch these highlights if they lose. So I was happy they won because then
people watch it.
People watch it. Yeah. So that was good for me. Where I think that made it worse for the people that really cared about the game that were UCLA fans. I was like, hey, it's cool. Like they're gonna watch my videos now. Like. You know, because I didn't really care who won, but whatever. Okay. So it's like, hey, someone's going to watch a video.
What's great is that's not even like a commentary on you being or not being a fan of USC. It's more just a commentary on every USC person's treatment of basketball, which is, I don't really care. Oh, they won? Great. Who cares?
How did they beat UCLA five times in a row? Like, that's just.
Yeah, I know. That's fun. It's great. We love it.
And UCLA is actually good.
Well,
now.
And the interesting part is, like, for a lot of UCLA fans, like, I think it's because of the, like, workplace things. They're really angry about it. Like, way angrier than they were about losing to Arizona the second time. And I'm like, look, you losing to USC in basketball is, like, it's not great. Like, it means, you've got some issues because you shouldn't be losing.
No Evan Mobley, though. That was the thing.
Isaiah Mobley.
I'm sorry.
The guy who's Isaiah currently Mobley on your team that you cover.
No, it's so funny. I was listening to – I don't listen to, like, the – the no truck stops one for basketball, but I listened to one and he kept saying, I think it was Carlos, who kept saying like Evan instead of Isaiah Mobley. And he said it like over and over and over again. Like they would correct him and he said it again and again. It was pretty funny.
Great. So Carlos,
I think it was Carlos,
who actually watches Pac-12 football, is screwing it up as much as you do, who doesn't watch it a bit.
Right. That's so like, I feel like I only screwed it up once. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
But anyway, we're going to be there. But
we're going to be there.
We'd love to do a meetup. We've done one like for at a bar where we like recorded. I don't think we're going to be recording.
I don't want to record a live show.
No, I think it would just be like, let's meet up and, we could potentially meet up at a sports book and watch one of the games or something, or just not have it be part of a game,
Just drink heavily. And
yeah. I like to do that. I just came back from Vegas for Super Bowl. And I was like, I'm going to go back. And then I might go back the following weekend for the first weekend of the Pac-12 tournament and play golf with some guys. So,
and then go back the following weekend and watch the first round of the NCAA tournament there.
No, I mean that's what I'm saying. I'm gonna go. Oh. Yeah, like the first round. That's at the next week, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would. Some friends are going to go play golf and stuff, and they like. I think you could go to the Cosmo for like $300, and it's like a all you can eat kind of thing for a while, like on Friday or something or Thursday. I would do something like that. But let's do for the Pac-12 tournament. Some sort of meetup, maybe like a Friday, maybe not really associated with the game. So no one has to work or anything or.
Yeah.
But if it was like, say like Arizona was playing Washington and we didn't have to like cover anything, like that'd be kind of cool. We could watch that or whatever, but I don't know. We'll figure it out. So either tweet us or email us and let us know, hey, you're going to go. Love to meet up. We'll kind of get a list going and pick a time and just go do it.
It'd be amazing.
All right. Why don't we take a quick break and we'll come back and do questions. All right. We're back here on the podcast of champions. Let's see. Do you want me to do a voicemail first?
I would love it if you did a voicemail first.
Here we go.
What's going on, guys? Evan from Tempe. I called a couple weeks ago. You guys ended up not playing the voicemail, but I wanted to ask again. So I'm thinking about it, and so I've been watching college football since 2006, and in my opinion, Herm Edwards is the most overrated recruiter I've ever seen. He's touted as an elite recruiter, still is, by the way. For some reason, he's still defended, and he's churned out the recruiting class of number 24, number 28, number 52nd, and number 106. I don't know how you are an elite recruiter and you're so great and all this stuff when those are your recruiting classes. There's not a single good class in there. And for the last two, he was cheating his ass off the whole time. And he still managed a 52nd and 106th class. So is Herm Edwards the most overrated recruiter since 2006? I certainly think so. I think you guys have some opinions on this. I think you guys would actually agree with me. So thank you guys. Peace.
I mean, I think it's hard to judge him as a recruiter in what we've seen the last two seasons because you had the scandal. And so, like, I think that's made it so you couldn't really recruit. I think your hands were tied. Like, they might have had good classes if they didn't get busted, but it screwed up the 2021. And then 2022, like, no one knew what was going to happen. It's like it was really hard to recruit for that one. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I tend to agree. I don't know if the jury's out, but I don't think there's a whole lot you can glean from the last two. Now, did he put himself in a position to be a good recruiter the last two cycles? No.
He did not.
No. So maybe there's something to that. But, I mean, recruiting in the top 30 at ASU is not – it's not great, but it's not horrible. I mean, that's about – I think that's about par for what ASU typically does. Yeah, it's got potential to recruit better than that, but that's about par. So I don't think he's some great recruiter, but fine. Not horrible.
But sort of like – it's just he shouldn't have been Arizona State's head coach.
No.
It's like you're nitpicking about recruiting or whatever. Like, it's just this was an experiment that didn't work, and it worked better than we thought in the very beginning, for sure. Like, it was a kind of a surprise. Like, oh, okay, he doesn't know what a Sun Devil is, but you know, maybe he can get this right and do some things that work. And it seemed like it was much more positive than what I anticipated. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's like this wasn't the right choice to be your head coach. It's got to end sometime soon, and I don't know what it's going to have. But, I mean, I don't know if he's over. I don't know anyone's saying, like, he's this great recruiter. Like, I've never said that. I mean, people have talked about, like, you know, he'd be good in the living rooms and stuff, which is fine. But, like, this is – you got to sell the whole package. Right now, there's just a lot of damage to this package.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll do the other one.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Burke. I'll try and keep this one as clear and concise as possible. But, you know, it seems like with the last year and a half in both football and basketball, it seems like the Pac-12 is on a positive trajectory. And it sounds like a lot of people are really putting that positive trajectory and associating it with just hiring the new commissioner. And to me, I don't necessarily buy that. I think it's more so that the two best basketball programs in UCLA and Arizona finally taking things seriously again and hired a new coach. And same thing with USC in football. They went out and got Lincoln Riley, and I think they're going to be a formidable program again. And by all means, I'm not saying that Larry Scott was a good commissioner. I know that he messed up a lot of things, specifically the TV deal. But I'm wondering, looking at things now and in the future, do you think it's that he's really been blamed with more than he should have in terms of the Pac-12's dismal performance over the last decade? Thanks, guys.
Yeah, Perk, it's a good question. I was of that theory that people pin too much on the commissioner, that's really the fault of the schools, and I tend to still be of that opinion. I do think, coupled with that, Larry Scott was also a bad commissioner. I think his theory about the Pac-12 network, his approach to the Pac-12 network, the deals he negotiated, the philosophy with which he negotiated, and generally his management style and all these other factors were just generally bad. So I think there were impacts that he made, but I think you're right. USC behaved like a big boy, like the big boy it should be, in their hiring of Lincoln Riley. UCLA had a long and involved coach search process that resulted in Mick Cronin, which I think, in retrospect, that was getting a high floor hire, you know, somebody who's going to win. It's just a question of whether he's going to win at an elite level. But that, again, that's better than hiring Steve Alford. And then Arizona went out and did a thing that took a little bit of courage. They went out and hired a career assistant for their premier basketball job. But a really, really well-regarded one, and one that a lot of people were talking about for a long time as potential elite head coach, and they went out and got him, and now it looks like that's what they're going to get. They're going to get an elite coach that could be there for a long, long time. So you have the two premier basketball programs behaving, once again, like the premier basketball programs, and you do have the premier USC, you know, football brand once again behaving that way. And those are really good things. We just need to see the results. You know, Arizona, UCLA, go win a national title in basketball. USC, go make a playoff. And if you can do that within the next couple of years, then you can start to say, okay, the Pac-12 is going to right its ship because the premier brands are performing that way again.
Yeah. I still think Larry Scott's terrible. As we already talked about at the top of the show, the 12-year deal, yeah. That was just like, the fact that the Big Ten is going to make $1 billion now, like that's how you do it. Like the Big Ten did it the right way. Yes. Are the fan bases more rabid? But they could have screwed it up and not been, you know, the ACC is okay. And they've screwed it up. Like they signed some huge long deal. There's conferences are doing well and they're going to take advantage of the resources they have available. Like, you got to do an even better job if you're the Pac-12, and you did a worse job. You did it so you could win the press conference 9 years ago. Well, you're still paying for it. The Big Ten's going to have 3 deals during your 1 deal. Like, and that just means renegotiate, make more money, all of that. So, yeah, I think he's still terrible. I think the fact that it's not on DirecTV, I mean, you basically missed the cable window. Like, when cable was big, you could have been part of it, and now cable is not as big anymore. So you have to wait. You can renegotiate and get on cable when no one needs to get on cable anymore. So there's just, yeah, a lot of bad decisions.
Yep. All right. Next up, we have an email from William. Podcast ideas. Gentlemen, my email already lacks credibility with that salutation. Oh, well. I'm a regular listener, and I look forward to your podcasts every week. In response to your request for some show ideas, I would like to suggest a deep dive on the rules and the practice of NIL deals. I know the subject matter is opaque and rapidly evolving, but it is clear that this is having a major impact on our beloved college sports landscape, and the rumors and speculation by the fans are wild and devoid of facts. I broke the topic into, quote, rules and, quote, practice, since we know that there will be a big gap between the two, given this is the land of high-integrity college sports. If the subject of practice is too sprawling, perhaps an in-depth analysis of one or two programs and UCLA, Bruins fan here, but a survey of Pac-12 versus SEC would work. I think the obvious concern of any fan base is to understand how we stand in comparison to our competition. This could be a related topic or another show, but some explanation of the next round of TV deals at the conference and CFP levels would be helpful. Bruin fans are regularly talking about whether or not UCLA plays or will play, quote, big boy football. I think the next round of TV deals for the Pac-12, SEC, and CFP will decide if we are in or out of, quote, big boy football. And if this sounds like too much work and true Podcast of Champions style, you can just wing it, guess, and pontificate. Thank you.
Thanks for the email, William. We talked some NIL stuff earlier on. I mean, the weird thing is, you know, they have the NCAA has their guardrails or whatever, right? Like, you're not supposed to be able to pay for recruits. So like pay a recruit to come to your school, but you're allowed to pay players and you just need a deliverable. So I think it's going to be very hard to police this. I think the Supreme Court just hammering the NCAA with that 9-0 decision and the Judge Kavanaugh, like just scorching of the NCAA. I feel like the NCAA realizes, like, if you bring any more stuff here, we're going to question if your organization is even constitutional. So I don't think there's a lot the NCAA can do. So you're that Tennessee collective and you're saying, all right, we're going to pull this money together. And you want to be, if you join our if you come here, you'll be part of this. You have to show up for this autograph signing or whatever. So that's what you have to do. If you do this autograph signing, then you get a car and a, you know, an apartment or whatever, all that kind of stuff. So I don't know if the NCAA is going to have a lot of teeth to fight this. And there's just some real basic guidelines as of right now, but I think it's going to be wild. I mean, I don't know how you're going to stop all this.
No, I don't. And, I think that's what, you know, what we were talking about up top. Pac-12 is just going to be behind and all that stuff, and it's a matter of whether or not they get the wherewithal or whether or not there's some realistic revenue sharing or some sort of controls put on this in the future.
Yeah, and there are some schools that, you know, you can talk to the compliance, and most places the school is not allowed to be involved. They can't broker deals, but I was listening to one podcast. It might have been might have been the Audible, where they talked to a school administrator that felt like they could help broker deals. And so I just don't know if there's going to be much. Even if people go completely off the rails, like, I don't think the NCAA is going to be doing much about it. So it's but you're not supposed to have like performance based incentives. The logo thing's a big deal. You know, like schools would have to work with the players. You know, like if you play for UCLA, you can sign like something for your name. But if you create something that's the UCLA logo on it, now you're infringing on their trademarks. And there's issues, you know, legal issues there. There's a lawsuit that just came out about they're suing USC and UCLA saying that these student athletes should be employees. So, I mean, there's a lot more to come, I think, with this stuff, but
absolutely,
it's kind of crazy. Let's see. What do we got? Next email. Cup and recruiting bias. This is from Drew.
Not a big fan of paragraph breaks.
No, this is going to be tough to read. With Cooper Kupp winning the receiving triple crown, gaining nearly 2,500 total receiving yards this season, and a Super Bowl MVP, it begs the question, how does a guy like that go completely unrecruited? How could an in-state Power 5 teams, Washington and Washington State, miss a guy like that? He had an NFL dad, played in Washington's 3A level, the state's second highest. It's not like he was a late bloomer, as he spent his time at Eastern Washington destroying Pac-12 teams and breaking all kinds of records. That brings me to something that any football fan can notice, but is very much taboo to talk about, but is their recruiting bias against white skill players. I can't remember ever seeing a white kid playing corner at a Power 5 school or any D1 school other, for that matter. And while schools like Bama have had some on the roster, they almost always are legacy players who never see the field. It's not like the ones who make the league are not good enough. Guys like Kupp, Jordy Nelson, Adam Thielen, et cetera, were obviously talented enough to be at Bama, Ohio State, et cetera, but never got that opportunity. Do recruiters and recruiting rankings look at white skill players differently and maybe encourage a guy who's a cornerback in high school to put on 20 pounds and become an outside linebacker or safety? I know this is a difficult subject, and I don't want to start anything like a racial debate, but I've noticed that it's only really something you can see at running back, receiver, and DB with few exceptions, such as a McCaffrey. As guys on the inside who have been around a long time, is this a thing that happens with what a guy like Kupp did in college versus Power 5 teams and is doing in the NFL? I see no possible way he shouldn't have been a minimum 4-star recruit other than he was written off as a small white kid playing for a bad team in Washington State.
It is a tough conversation. I do think they're... the reality is everyone has inherent biases, some of it is, you know, I think for an evaluator, they're going, a lot of times you might run into a situation where you're like, who does this guy look like? How does he, because you're trying to fit it to a comparison.
Right.
And so I'm just trying to think of like a relatively pain-free explanation for it, because I think that's, you know, I think there is some inherent bias going on, but I don't know, there's also some realities where I mean, fewer white people are playing football, and so the demographic of the sport is changing more and more, and so that plays a role in that specific topic, but it's, you know, there's also predominance of the white people who are playing football are playing quarterback or offensive line, and I think it's the reverse thing happening there, where I think you know, and with quarterback especially, it gets into a money contest too, because the kids who can afford the trainers and afford all these things, and you know, where is wealth concentrated in this country? So there's a lot of dynamics at play with which positions end up with specific demos. But yeah, I mean, I think there's, you know, who knows why Cooper Kupp was under-evaluated. It could have been, you know, I don't know anything about his history. He could have been 5'8" coming out of high school. I have no idea. And then he grew 6 inches. And he could have been good, but then the thing that you're getting at isn't that he's white. It's that he's 5'8". You know, and I have no idea what he was. And
right.
It might very well have been. So
he could have been a, like a he could have been a black receiver and the same thing. He just developed later or whatever. Like,
it, yeah. I don't think, look, I mean, everyone in the entire world, including me and including you, the listener, have your biases when you're approaching anything. And it's a lot of it is unexamined and a lot of it you don't even know is going on. And a lot of it's just the way our brains work. I'm going to compare this to a thing I've seen before, because that's the easiest way to contextualize it for yourself. And, sometimes you don't even know that you're omitting potentially, valuable, context or valuable, things, because you're just trying to fit it to a predetermined, pattern of some sort. So in this case, well, I haven't seen a guy who looks like that playing, you know, that way or whatever it is. And you're like, oh, okay, write him off. And not even necessarily consciously.
Yeah.
Stuff can happen.
I remember one of my buddies, my setter in high school, actually, this guy, Jeff, was really good basketball player. And he would go to camps and stuff, but he was a white dude. And he was like, it was really hard to get attention, even though, you know, because most of the players were black, but they would just, if you're an evaluator, you've seen, you know, you're looking for something, like you said, that you're familiar with. And you're like, you know, this guy better be like exceptional. Otherwise, I'm not even going to bother. And he felt like there was some sort of, I remember that him telling me that, like there was still some
well,
sort of
like
bias.
There are tropes in scouting. And I don't even know, like, I have no idea, but like tropes in scouting that are like, oh, well, he's a white kid, so he's going to get less athletic as he gets older. Like as he grows into a full, like an adult's body, he's going to get less athletic. And that's like a trope that I've heard. And I'm like, I don't know if that's true. Like, I'm not a kinesiology or like a, you know, I'm not a physiology guy.
No, I
don't. But there's this like, there's scouting tropes like that are out there. And like real things about like body development. And it's just like, I don't know. And you know, that's where it's like, I could evaluate this and I could interrogate it, or you know, I just don't do this. I don't do the evaluation.
Yeah, we're around the teams. And to be fair, like, I think you can embrace race. Like, it becomes like, I mean, I think, you know, the Cooper Kupp stuff, like, people will talk about it. I mean, Jason Sehorn was a cornerback for USC when I was in school, a white cornerback who ended up, I think he went like a Pro Bowl. He ran like a 4.3. So he was sort of like a unicorn. There just weren't that many white cornerbacks. I played golf recently with Sonny Bird, who was like, Pete Carroll's like first tailback. He was a white guy, and you know, South Bay guy, and Brandon Hancock. And they made jokes. Like, I think Todd McNair was the running back coach. They were like the albino backs. Like, there was a couple white running backs, and there was like embrace. Like, they were just like, oh, we don't have a lot of white running. Like, it wasn't like it didn't seem like it was ever a problem. They sort of like just,
well,
they made fun of it or whatever.
Now that we're like talking about it, it's interesting to think about. So say you are a white guy who wants to be a corner, right? So first, start with black quarterbacks. What do they have to face? People constantly telling them you need to be a wide receiver. And at every level, starting at freshman, quarterback, and then on through their high school career, then into their college career, and then even in the pros.
And if you're like,
you need to switch over to wide receiver.
And if you're like a drop back black quarterback that doesn't want to run that much, and they're like, no, you should run. Like, no, I'm a, you're like, you're fighting that constantly.
Constantly. Yeah. And so, like, how many people were talking about, who was it who was constantly talked about as, like, an athletic quarterback? Was it Steve McNair, who was not a dual threat at all?
No.
But constantly talked about as a running threat. And it's like, no, you're not watching him play. You're base, or, like, Cam Newton. He's not.
He fires the ball down.
Just, like, these guys are more, like, pocket passers, and you're talking about them as, anyway, what, or not Cam Newton, I'm thinking of Jameis Winston.
Yeah, Cam would run people over.
Yeah, Cam would bulldoze people. so, but there's that, and then the reverse thing, which is, and this is like if you've got a, you know, a white guy who wants to play cornerback, and they start in eighth grade football. Well, if you're fast enough to play cornerback, then you're fast enough to play wide receiver. So you're constantly fighting probably your coaches at the middle school level, and then your coaches at the high school level who are telling you, well, no, you should, because of their own kind of inherent biases. Yeah. Well, no, you should be playing wide receiver. You should be playing both ways. And then you've got evaluators who are saying, oh, but you're more of a receiver in college. Why? Well, probably because of unexamined bias of some sort. Maybe you're a good cornerback. I mean, who really knows at that age? And so I think there's probably some pre-existing factors that go into it that are based on other people's perceptions of you.
Yeah.
Beyond your actual... Because anybody who's athletic enough to be a speedy receiver, because you do find a lot more, I would say, you know, counter to this, you find a lot more white receivers than you find white cornerbacks. Well, why is that? And that's, right. you know, because I don't know.
You got that thing. And I think now in the NCAA transfer portal years, like if Cooper Kupp goes under the radar and he plays at Eastern Washington and he goes for like 1,500 yards his freshman year, like Washington would be like, hey, come on, transfer here. You know, and you might, you know, it's one of those things where it's just evaluation and it's tough. And I don't know his story. We'd have to go back and look and see, you know, did he go to any camps that he, you know, that's great that he played for the second best division in Washington, but you're still like some small school in Washington State is just not getting the same kind of recognition that if he was in South Florida or something, you know, if Cooper Kupp grew up in South Florida and was a decent size, like he might've got recruited by like Miami or Florida, you know, I don't know. It's like,
who knows?
Yeah. But I wouldn't just jump to race being like, you know,
maybe Brandon Huffman just hated him. Like, did you ever think of that? Maybe Huff just like actually he hated the kid.
Yeah.
And that was it. Maybe. Like, sorry, no, I hate that kid. Love you, Huff.
Huff. Thinking of you today, Huff.
Yeah, we are. Avery Strong, buddy. All right. This is from Matt from San Diego. A proclamation, a question, and an idea. Good morning, evening, or afternoon, gentlemen. First off, I would like to proclaim my devoted love for this podcast. As to the surprise or disappointment of the both of you, it somewhat serves a purpose in my life. Wow. My dad, an avid UCLA fan, passed away a couple of years back, and listening to you banter every week about this goofy conference somewhat fills in the goofy conversations my dad and I would have about this goofy conference. So thanks for that, I guess. No, seriously, thank you both for the entertainment. Oh, well.
That's very sweet.
Thank you, Matt. Glad we can play that role for you. Anyways, I have a question stemming from Dave's comments in last week's show. He stated that the only teams in this conference with the overall ability to win a championship when performing at full capacity are USC, Oregon, and, quote, God forbid, UCLA. He also said the ASU is at the tippy top of the middle tier of teams in this conference. So one omission I made is Washington is also in that group at the top. But I would like to know how you both would rank the schools in the conference. Would USC, Oregon, and UCLA be the only teams in the top tier? Is ASU better than Washington if placed in the middle tier? Would Utah, in retrospect, be somewhere in the lower tiers? I'd like to get opinions from both of you. So I guess if it's from a potential standpoint, like, If you wiped out all the rosters for both teams and you wiped out all the coaches and you just said these programs, like, what is their potential? I mean, I think it would be, you know, well, yeah, I mean, I think it still would be USC, Oregon, UCLA, and Washington.
Yeah, I think those four. With Arizona State, a lot of potential, you know.
A ton of potential as Phoenix continues to grow. They've got the waste management
open, like the two holes and ones on 16, and they just like littered the. It's crazy.
I didn't watch.
It's like Super Bowl, like they're going nuts. That place is great. A lot of great golf courses. It's an awesome place. Like that place, they should kill it there at Arizona State. Kill it.
Love it. Love hearing you talk about golf. So if I'm ranking it, Utah's in that middle tier. It's just from a you always got to think of it from a recruiting potential standpoint. And Utah, I think, it's dependent a lot on development. And then because of that, it's dependent a lot on a coach. I think Kyle Whittingham has built something really special there. I don't know if it's sustainable beyond Whittingham. That's where you get into like cult of personality stuff. Like, is it Whittingham or is it Utah? Structurally, you know, USC is always going to be USC and it'll always have the potential to be USC again. Oregon is getting there. UCLA is slowly losing that, or rapidly losing that, but you know, maybe eventually they can get back to it and recruiting at a high level. And Washington has it at like, they're like the bottom of the top tier in that no, their recruiting base isn't what the other schools are and no, you know, the structural, you know, place is not as like, okay, they're always going to be able to reload, but there's enough there that they could, you know, get back to a top 20 recruiting class every single year because they were just there like 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And be back in the, you know, playoff conversation there pretty quickly. ASU, I think, has potential to get into a top tier if Phoenix continues to grow and if they can actually show some ability to retain Arizona talent here pretty soon.
And I think, I mean, where was Oregon like 20 years ago. You know, like,
well, that's the other thing is like all you can get up every program has potential because every program you could just have. Okay, you've got a really rich donor and. Because I mean, Eugene, Oregon is nowhere. It's nothing. It's a.
They built like, their own tradition. And
it's
stuff,
fancy yeah. Corvallis. Like it's the same thing. There's like if you haven't looked at a map of Oregon, look how many miles separate Eugene and Corvallis. Like it is not much, and the fortunes of those two programs couldn't be more different. The reason for that is basically one man's largesse. So.
But you got to have some success. Like Utah broke through, you know, won the division a few times, won the conference, you know, they win a Rose Bowl, they go to a playoff. Maybe you're not doing that every year, but you do that for a couple years, you can put yourself in that top tier. But it's going to take a little while. It's not just like, oh, they went to a Rose Bowl, so now they're in the top tier. Like, no, like, but several years of that. I mean, we saw what Oregon was able to do and get close to winning a championship and, you know, changing the sport with Chip Kelly and all that. Yeah,
but the reason we talk about it with Oregon is because they've also done it across coaches. If it was just like Chip Kelly had four great years there and then farted around. But they did it with, Bilotti was pretty damn close to elite tier. And then you had Chip Kelly who was. Then you had Mark Helfrich who went to the freaking playoff, the first ever playoff. And were they in the title game? I think they were. 2014?
I think they were, yeah.
Yeah. And then you had Cristobal who, you know, won a couple of Rose Bowls and was, also in that kind of near elite top tier. So they've done it now across coaches. That's clearly a program, that is elite, not just a coach. With Utah, I just don't know because Whittingham has been there, I think he's in his 52nd year. As the Utah head coach?
He's up there. I think 18 or something.
Yeah, but he's been there forever, and he's built that program in his image, and it's very much it does all the things that he wants a program to do. Will that be able to sustain beyond him is the question.
It is 18th. So you need – so for Utah to get to that next tier, Whittingham has to be like the Bilotti, and then they need a Chip Kelly after that. Like, so building on what – you know, you had the Urban Meyer, like, you know, that was – but you didn't really, like – you know, they're a Power Five team. If Whittingham ends up being the Bilotti that like sets this standard, and then you get this younger, innovative coach that builds on that and like makes runs at playoffs and everything, then we would be talking about, hey, it's USC and Oregon and Washington and UCLA and Utah or whatever, whoever ends up being that top tier. So Oregon won a couple Rose Bowls. UCLA recently, did they win a Rose Bowl? What was the – I don't remember. I'm trying to think.
Within my lifetime, they have won a Rose Bowl.
Okay. Very good.
Barely.
What do you remember about it?
Well, I remember vestigial memories. I was drinking some formula and shitting my diaper. And UCLA won the Rose Bowl.
A couple years ago then, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice. But yeah, so – I mean, Oregon State, like Washington State, like, I don't know, like if you, it's going to take a while, but you can build on, Utah's built this great foundation with Whittingham and.
Or you can be like Arizona, and we are big Arizona fans here on the podcast. And you've got your Mike Bilotti, your Chip Kelly, and your Mark Helfrich and Mario Cristobal and Dan Lanning all rolled into one and Jed Fish, baby.
Right. They're built on that one.
Hey, he might even be the Phil Knight. Who knows? Who knows what kind of wealth is lurking in Jed Fish's background? All right. And then lastly, I thought of a game you two could reluctantly take part in. It'll be called the Podcast of Champions Snap Count Draft, where you two at the beginning of the season take alternating turns in a draft-like format, going through each team's roster and picking the incoming players, true freshmen or transfers, that will play the most snaps on their respective teams. For example, whomever gets the first pick would go with DTR, and the second pick would be Jaden Delora, whom each will play a large number of snaps. At the end of the season, you two tally up the snap counts of the players you each picked respectively, and whoever comes away with the highest total snap count wins. The outcomes of the winner and loser will be decided at a later date. I hope this appeals to the two of you enough to where it gets stuck somewhere in your brain matter while going in one ear and out the other. That's all I got. Sorry for all the typing. I love the show. I love you both. And I love my incredibly disappointing Bruins FSC. Sincerely, Matt from San Diego. I like the idea. The problem is a lot of schools don't track snap counts, and I would have to then we would have to then do some labor.
God.
And, you know, I think USC does a good job of tracking their snap counts. Maybe. I know Shotgun did
Shotgun
a thing.
Shotgun does it. He does
Shotgun
it.
Does it because he's crazy.
He is insane.
I don't know. So there are some schools that actually do track it and they post it, but not everyone. And so it would require a little bit too much labor to do it by snap count. We could maybe go by position and do like who will have the most rushing attempts, who will have the most pass attempts.
Yeah, we could do that. We could do stuff like that.
Do like a little fantasy draft.
I'm a little confused though. He said DTR. Like, is he talking about newcomers? Like, he wrote DTR and Jaden Delora. Like, those would be the first two picks. But DTR is returning to UCLA. He's not a newcomer. Is that, did I read this wrong? Or, you know what I'm talking about? Like, he's talking about transfers or freshmen.
I don't know. Maybe he got confused. I sometimes get confused midway through an email. So who knows? but yeah, I mean, we could do it with just everybody. Who cares?
Or we could have like, you know, we could ask each publisher, hey, nominate like your five top newcomers you think will play the most, and then we draft from them. I don't know, something.
Wow, really outsourcing the work. I love it.
Could do a little more outsourcing.
Well, that way we don't know. That way we don't have to know anything, which is good.
Yeah, we just pick from a list. All right. Thanks, Matt from San Diego, and thanks Shane for giving us the topic because, like, you know, we literally like,
Yeah.
Well. Not we. I was like, oh, what should we do? Like, okay.
Thanks, Ryan, for carrying the show because I am falling asleep in my chair right now.
All right. We'll wrap it up. That is David Woods. I am Ryan Abraham. And did I say my name right? Probably not.
You just fucked up your last name. It's now 10 o'clock.
It's hard. Yeah, I'm Ryan Abraham. And we are the podcast of champions.
We
and,
are.
We are tired. And it's Wednesday night. But we really hope you enjoyed the show. And we will talk to you next time.
Good night.